I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about places that artists can go to connect with their muses, art havens. We will talk about the environments that help artists create, and we'll talk about how vibrant an arts community Central Indiana is. Joining me for this discussion will be two guests from the Art Sanctuary of Indiana, located in Martinsville, its founder, Ron Stanhouse, and resident artist Ellen Wilson Pruitt, and one from the Arts Council of Indianapolis, Shannon Linker. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the State House File, and your host. I hope you all had a pleasant holiday weekend. It's good to be back with you. We're going to be talking today about art havens here in Central Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests, I got a great group of guests today, are Ellen Wilson Pruitt of the Art Sanctuary of Indiana, located at Martinsville. Ellen, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
It's good to have you here. Ron Stanhouse, who is the founder of the Art Sanctuary. Ron, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John.
Certainly good to have you here. And Shannon Linker, who is with the Arts Council of Indianapolis. Shannon, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Certainly. Well, I want to start a little bit. I think we probably ought to explain to people, give them some sort of context. Ron, I'm going to throw this question to you first. What is the Art Sanctuary of Indiana, and why did you found it?
Well, Art Sanctuary is a repurposed former Methodist church, about 19,000 square foot in size, and I always credit the mayor of Bloomington as his idea. It's something they'd love to have in Bloomington, but they just don't have that kind of affordable real estate. And so as a resident of Bloomington and maybe a devotee of downtown revitalization, I've been advising Martinsville, and I'm an entrepreneur as well. So I saw a huge opportunity to make a giant step forward for Martinsville. And we bought a church that now is repurposed. We have about 20 artist studios, and then the large former sanctuary is a gallery, an exhibit hall, a banquet hall. We've got a community kitchen, a certified kitchen as well, and we do a lot of things in that space.
What you say it's repurposed? What goal were you trying to achieve? I mean, they're all. If you were buying the space, there were all. You could have opened just a traditional gallery if you'd wanted to. By creating the idea of a sanctuary, what were you trying to get done there?
We are taking some of the first steps to bring an identity to Martinsville, and you know, provide an outlet for creative expression.
So it was more about, you know, community revitalization than necessarily an artistic purpose. Well, Ellen, what drew you then to the Art Sanctuary?
Well, I'm a porcelain artist and had been involved in a lot of endeavors to promote that particular art form. And when I heard about this project, and so I went to a meeting. And so I was one of two of the first artists that moved into the building. Mm-hmm. And ever since, I've just really been invigorated by not only the repartee between the other artists, but also the long-range plans that we have of actually having an art identity in Martinsville.
How does it work? I mean, do you pay rent for the studio space or?
Yes. What's nice about the building is that our studios are in rooms that were various classrooms and chapels and so forth. So practically every room has a different configuration. And it's depending on a particular art medium, some spaces work better for others. And it's neat because each studio has its own character.
Well, and Shannon, I'm going to ask, in terms of creating these sort of nurturing environments for artists, how well do we do that in Central Indiana? What things are we doing well? What things could we do better?
Well, actually, I think people, if they learn how many of these kind of studio buildings that we have in Central Indiana, they would be quite impressed, and to actually visit them and to see what they have to offer. Because most of them, not only, like Ron was saying, not only do they have studio space, some are live workspace, some are just studio space for artists that we can talk about the benefits of that too, but they have public spaces, galleries, and lots of nonprofits that exist within those buildings. So I think we're doing really well. We've got, I was kind of going through a list and making a list of all the key spaces, and we've got 8 right very close to downtown. Some of them have been around for many years. For example, like the Stutz, that's the largest concentration of artists in the Midwest, and that's something we should be very proud of. And I think something that's key to all of them, I was talking to someone in a kind of a suburb that didn't have a space like that, that really would love to have one. And we were talking about it, and it seems to come down to there needs to be one person, somebody that can buy a building, has a building, a philanthropist, somebody that's really committed. Ron is a good example that really can get it going, because there's lots of abandoned buildings. There's lots of buildings that are not in use for whatever reason that can really revitalize a community. And so there's a lot of opportunity, and we've got a lot of great examples here in Indy.
We are talking about art havens here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. You say that there are a lot of communities that would like to have places like this. What stops communities from doing this?
Well, I think there's
You mentioned, obviously, that the quickest way to get there is to have someone like Ron, someone who's got a passion,
exactly,
is willing to do that.
Exactly.
But absent that, and some of it, I'm not going to put you on the spot, Ron, but it sounds like it's not just someone who's got a passion. He's also got a fair amount of means, or at least access to means, to make it happen as well. So that can be a relatively rare combination.
Right. Well, I think there are maybe 2 things to think about. One, you have to have a decent concentration of artists. If you don't have that, I think what happens is, if you get enough started, if you get something small started in a small community that's maybe 30, 40 minutes away from the core downtown, you will draw artists there. Artists will come out of the woodwork to be a part of something like this. So I think, and you know, Ron and Ellen could probably speak to that if that's what happened where they are. But I think there is a need for it in a lot of these outlying communities, and not just downtown. I mean, we've got lots of success stories, and I think every one of them would come down to one person with vision taking it upon themselves, and if they're not that person with the means or the ability to do it, finding that person and partnering and getting them on board and getting them to believe in the value of it. And that's kind of how all of these have started.
Ron, in terms of executing the vision, I mean, what was the toughest part about it? What was the hardest thing?
Well, it's relatively easy to write a check to buy a building.
The hard part is keeping it going, right?
Yeah,
well, that's it. And I guess that's what I'm assuming. You had to have some sort of model, and we're figuring out, okay, how do I do this so that it stands a reasonable chance of success, and I'm not just going to be throwing my money into this old church year after year after year.
And technically, we're a nonprofit. We have a nonprofit board, and I rent to the nonprofit, while I'm also the volunteer property manager, so I donate a lot of time. But there is a board. They make the decisions. They determine, you know, what the priorities are and how things will be run. So I try not to have my hands in it as much as possible.
How great a need, Ellen, is there as an artist yourself for havens like this, places that artists can go that might not be quite the traditional gallery or whatever? I mean, how long had you been looking for an opportunity or a place like this before it came online?
Well, I had been more or less practicing my art at home, and this gave me the opportunity to showcase my work as well as a space where I could hold workshops and classes. And since my art medium is a little bit unusual, it gives me a chance to introduce a whole new public to this type of art form. And the Art Sanctuary, we have been more or less a springboard for a lot of artists. We've had several artists that have gone on to move to the Stutz and to the Murphy. And so I kind of feel like we're like the beginning point for these artists to step out and have a working studio and then actually really start looking at their art as a public form.
How did it affect your art or liberate your art to be able to move it out of your house, as it were, and into a studio space?
Oh, well, I mean, an artist is an exhibitionist. You want to show off. And this, we have open studios every second Friday of the month. So we have people that come and tour the building and visit with the artists and learn a lot about just the creation of the art itself. And being with a lot of different art mediums, even though we're not working in the same art form, we keep each other our spirits up and critique each other, and it's just a great atmosphere to keep the art flowing.
Well, and it sounds like a lot of the value is that it brings the artist into connection with his or her audience,
right,
as well on a regular basis. Shannon, in terms of artist havens, what things are necessary for a good one? For one that works?
Well, I can just look to the ones here that we have in Indy, and I think the ability to, the public spaces are important. The Harrison Center for the Arts is a good example of that. Mm-hmm. Every first Friday, IDOTA first Friday, I should say, they have an incredible amount of people coming through that space. And so that means not only the three or four gallery spaces they have on site, as well as the nonprofits that are there, but the 30 some odd artists that are there get that kind of exposure. So having a strong nonprofit behind it is critical to make sure that they're marketing the public spaces, the gallery spaces, to get people in there and making sure the right people are coming and seeing the work and all of that. So I think, you know, the Harrison Center does an awesome job of doing that. There's a new space that's been around a couple of years. It's called the Indy Artist Colony. It's a live workspace, but they have been very eclectic in who they're bringing in. So they have poets and writers and musicians, and so they incorporate music into their shows. They have two gallery spaces down on the kind of storefront level, so people see what's going on, and they have visual as well. So I think that's a good thing to incorporate when you can, because a lot of our studio spaces don't necessarily incorporate other art forms. So that's a wonderful thing. Again, the Stutz is successful on many levels, and part of that is because they have so much space that they can have all manner of businesses as well. So when you are an artist and your neighbors are successful commercial businesses, that can only help bring people in to see your work, help with their annual open house that, you know, 7,000 people come through that building. And it's in part due to the collaboration with those commercial businesses as well.
What dooms, Shannon, I'm going to stay with you for a second. What dooms one of these artist havens to not being effective or not working? Are there places where they just won't function or work well?
Well, I don't know if there's anything that a place location. I think that, you know, we've learned that places way out in the middle of nowhere can be really successful. But I think what would prevent you from being successful here in Indy is not having enough public events. You know, if you have the artist studios and you you allow the artists to invite people in or what have you, well, they're pretty busy doing their own things, and they're not always great marketers. Some of them are, but not always. So if you don't have a regular open house or open studio night or open events, gallery shows, and inviting new people in, not just the resident artists, then I think that's that you're going to struggle. And an example, again, I come back to the Stutz, but they have recently started in their gallery space bringing in outside artists just to increase the awareness of their own artists. So it's a great solution, I think.
We are talking about Art Havens here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us 1-866-476-3881. My guests are Ellen Wilson-Pruitt, Ron Stanhouse, and Shannon Linker. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about Art Havens here on No Limits today. My guests are Ellen Wilson-Pruitt, who is an artist in residence at the Art Sanctuary of Indiana, located in Martinsville, Ron Stanhouse, who is the Art Sanctuary's founder, and Shannon Linker with the Arts Council of Indianapolis. Just before the break, we were talking about places that don't work. Shannon, you were talking about that at least one of the concepts is having a living and working space at these. What are the advantages of that, and what are the disadvantages?
Well, we have two spaces like that in town. The Wheeler Arts Community down in Fountain Square is a live workspace, and Indie Artist Colony as well. So I think that there are a lot of artists that would like more of that. I think the main benefit is that you don't have to quit what you're doing in regular life to go to your studio. It would be really convenient, but then other artists...
Yeah, whatever inspiration strikes.
You can do it, whatever. And you're constantly surrounded by people that could inspire you, that you could collaborate with, and all of that. Because we know that visual artists especially tend to be solitary creatures. And if they have their studio at home, you have to push them sometimes to get out and network and talk to people and talk about your work and collaborate and all of that. So it's a huge benefit in that regard. But I think they might say, some of them, that they might want a separation. You know, some of them want to be able to go to a studio, do what they need to do. Some of them work, you know, a 9-to-5 schedule at their studio. They, you know, some of them work all night, so maybe they need the live workspace. But I think it's really kind of personal preference, I would suppose. But I know our artists would probably say we want more live workspace eventually.
Ellen, you were talking earlier about how, you know, one of the big changes that occurred when you moved to the Art Sanctuary was that you began to interact more with your audience, with the people who enjoy your art. Did that change the way you do your art? Did it change the art itself? Did it change the process for you?
Oh, yes. I mean, I work... I have a 9-to-5 job, and
what do you do?
I am a manager in a plastic injection mold manufacturer there in Martinsville. So I live on the western part of the county, so I can stop at the studio on my way home from work and paint or whatever. And yes, it's changed my work, because a lot of times I find myself thinking, well, I'm going to paint this particular thing because it's going to be a showy piece. When people walk in the studio, they're going to look at that piece and they're going to step forward and investigate further. And I think a lot of it is even we get a lot of programs we sponsor for Youth Art Month in March. We have the local elementary and middle schools, and we put their art in the gallery. And so we have these young people coming in, and they're seeing their art hung in a gallery. And the families come in and look at the art. And it gives people a feeling that they're not put off by something because it's called a gallery. that they feel like that they can actually come in and view art without a high pressure sales or anything like that. That a gallery also means
it's a place you can go
enjoy,
even if you don't know the difference between a Chablis and a Chardonnay.
Right.
So, in terms of well, I'm going to take a step back. You work in a rather distinctive medium. You'd said you like porcelain. What drew you to that?
Well, actually, the permanence of that art form, a fired piece of porcelain, the colors never fade. They're not affected by light or moisture. So the piece will look the same 500 years from now as what it does. So it gives me a chance to educate people about this art form because it's done the same as it was in ancient China. And so it's sort of, I view my studio as much as an educational forum to educate the public about this art form as I do as a showcase for my artwork.
And Ron, I'm going to ask, since you're the founder, you know, in some ways, the vision is yours here. When you were starting out on this, what did you think constituted success? What was going to make this, in your mind, worth your time, energy, and commitment?
Success is a very long-term goal for me, and it has to do with the entire city. I mean, there's a makeover in progress, and so we've got short-term goals. We see 20 artists that collaborate, network, socialize, you know, on the personal level. They've developed all sorts of friendships, and then we see outside artists who orbit, right? They might come on the second Friday, or they take classes from Ellen or, you know, some of the other artists. And so there's a wider collection of artists than just our studio artists. And we see this developing ever slowly, but it grows, and it is creating a name for Martinsville itself and an identity that can be built on.
We are talking about Art Havens here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Ron, you're talking about how it's creating a new identity for Martinsville. How much support have you gotten from the city itself, from Martinsville? I mean, the pedigree of this is kind of, it starts as a, you know, the brainchild, you said, of the mayor of Bloomington, and ends up in Martinsville somewhere. How does that work? Has the city adopted the Art Sanctuary, or is it sort of a standalone?
Well, it's primarily Morgan County artists, although we've had artists come from every surrounding county, Monroe and Brown and Johnson, you get the idea. Mm-hmm. But it really is organically Martinsville and Morgan County. So, you know, we find the city administration to be very easy to work with. We've got bigger goals and bigger visions than just a 19,000 square foot Methodist church. You know, we'd like to transform the whole downtown, and maybe the most the proudest part of what we've done so far is we've spun out three individual artists, very retail oriented artists, that took downtown storefront space. Mm-hmm. They expanded their artist venture and created shops. Mm-hmm. So to help fill, you know, a struggling downtown is very satisfying for me.
Well, and Shannon, I'm going to throw that one to you, too, and broaden it a little bit. One of the reasons, and you talked about how important the not-for-profit model is for support for the arts, in part that's because government support, government funding for the arts can become a hot-button issue. Do we do enough to support the arts in central Indiana, you know, as a self-governing society? And if the answer is no, what ways could we do more? And then maybe talk a little bit about what the arts do for a community.
Well,
those are three big questions.
Start
with the first one. I just gave you three shows, so why don't we start with the first question first?
Okay, so
do we do enough to support
enough? Well, I guess it depends on who we is. If that's the city government, state government, there are, obviously, we're in tough financial times right now and have been for several years. So we've been cut and cut and everywhere that can be cut. And I will have to point out that Mayor Ballard has put his foot down and said, we cannot cut the arts funding anymore. He has been very supportive of the arts community, and we have partnered with him, worked with him in his office very often to make sure that we are giving as much support as we can. Could there be more? Of course. Are there other cities our size in the Midwest that are spending more, doing more? Yes, there are. And we can always look to those models to try to do better.
What are the ones, what cities are doing it right or well?
Well, when you think about cities that are similarly sized,
that you look
Cincinnati
at and say, boy,
has a great funding model. Louisville, Kentucky has a great gallery scene. They have really important public art. They have a terrific scene, and they are smaller than us. You know, there are obviously Chicago, not in our league really as far as size, but amazing things coming out of there. So there are, I've heard a lot about Detroit lately doing a lot of things, you know. So I think it's a matter of finding out who we are and what we want. And I think that clearly the arts have done so much to prove their value, not only with creating a desirable culture here in Indianapolis, but economic impact. We've proven that. It's just a matter of educating the rest of the community that may not know that. The city government gets it, but they have to answer to the greater community when it comes time to vote and all of that. So I think that's the struggle right now. And part of the Arts Council's mission is to educate.
Make that clear.
Right.
Well, and I want to pick up on this. I mean, presumably, folks in Cincinnati and Louisville have the same sort of political challenges that we do. How do they fund the arts more aggressively than we do? And B, how do they make that case presumably to their voters, who would have the same sort of reticence, I would guess, that voters in Indianapolis would?
Right, and I'm sure they do, and we all share similarities being Midwestern cities and all of that. You know what? I'm probably not the best person to answer that. My job is really, and my focus is really our individual artists. It's not really funding models and mechanisms, you know. So I may not be the best to answer that. I think it goes back to finding what works for us, and you've got to have some really creative people to do that. And I think people in those cities have found a few key people that really, like we're talking about with these venues, it's the same thing. You've got to find really key people. Now in Indy, what we have going for us that most of those other cities don't have are really impressive foundations and funders that a lot of those other cities are jealous of. So their models for funding
have to be different because they don't have
the foundation support that we do. Right. So they don't have as many nonprofits as we do. So the funding support we do have is kind of spread out further than a lot of other cities our size too. So it does get fairly complicated. But, you know, if we're talking about the broader arts community, that's one thing. But we're talking about individual artists. Of course, no city money goes to artists. And all of the programs and services we have for artists, none of that comes via the city or state government, anything like that. I mean, that's just something that happened in the 80s, and we don't really talk about it, you know. But, yeah, so that's all private foundations.
We are talking about art havens here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at No Limits. We've gotten actually a comment from a listener named Kathleen through Facebook saying, bringing local artists together is helpful, but is there any chance you could partner with the IMA to bring in visiting artists such as the Vermont Studios Center? Shannon, I'll throw that one to you.
Okay. You know, this idea, and as I was looking through and kind of doing a little quick research on what we have, the thing that is missing is a residency program. I have done some research. There are a few artists in town that have come to me to say, look, we need something like this. How can we do it?
What is a residency?
Well, That is where you can have, it can be local, but it can be, typically it's visiting artists. Mm-hmm. And so an artist would get funding to come into a space, maybe similar to the Harrison Center or something like that, but a space where they would have a month, 2 months, a summer to just focus on their work. The funding would cover their living expenses, their materials, everything. I went to a Drury, a residency program, a Midwest. So there's like five or six key ones in the Midwest, and they are doing such incredible things. It's just amazing bringing artists from all over the world into their communities in cities our size and mostly smaller. And so the influence of those artists who are doing amazing things in all parts of the country that spend a month or two in that small town or wherever it is really incredible. And I think that is what's missing here. We have great studio spaces and they do wonderful things for artists, but that's a great point. I think we really do partner with the IMA, partner with whomever.
Break
to
down
get
the insularity, get something.
Exactly. So right.
We've also gotten a tweet from a listener named Amy who says, don't forget the Hendricks County art scene, and gives us a URL, tourhendrickscounty.com. Wanted to emphasize that there is obviously, there's art going on all over the place here. And I guess this comes back to Ron. I'm going to throw this back to you. You're saying that a large part of what the Art Sanctuary is doing for Martinsville is transforming the identity. In what ways is it transforming the identity, and why is that important?
Well, let's back up to your tweet there just a minute,
okay.
Because there are so many things we can talk about. And we have good friends in Hendricks County.
Okay.
So their Visitors Bureau really likes what's going on in Morgan County. They've identified multiple unique attractions in Morgan County, including Art Sanctuary, as places where their Visitor Bureau promotes. It's considered a trail. It's coordinated with some of Hendricks County attractions. But we find them to be great friends there, and they've got a good art trail as well.
Okay. Why though, is it so important to in effect, kind of rebrand Martinsville with the arts?
Well, Martinsville hasn't really had a chance to tell their story. You know, if you go back 50 years, and it was a successful community, but in the tradition of, you know, the small towns, they've struggled, they've declined, and Martinsville fell into that group. So what they're learning, economic development tools, is tourism, innkeeper tax funds Visitors Bureau, which promotes tourism, and that gives them a voice to tell their story, the interesting places, the events and the attractions, you know, like Art Sanctuary, but like Hunter's Honey Farm and Sheep Street. There's some great places. They generally have a rural feel to them based on Morgan County, you know, geography and density of population. But that's what Martinsville needs. They need a voice. And so we're working on that. We've created some tools that, you know, 67 other counties have in place. And so there is some tourism. You'll begin to see and hear more about Morgan County.
Through the fact that people are coming to the Art Sanctuary, how many people do you get coming through there, say, in the course of a week?
Great question. Well, I don't think we measure it, but
I don't think so either. I mean, one of our biggest, we have a signature show in September, which is our artisan show, which is a juried art show. And we attract artists from all over the state for that show. As I had said, in March, we showcase the youth art, and that is a big event for us because it brings people into the Art Sanctuary that otherwise might never be exposed to the arts. And it also shows that we're endorsing art education in the schools. We realize that that is also one of the things that is being cut back in the school. And this is our way of saying that we think that it needs to be there. It has an important role.
We are talking about art havens here on No Limits. My guests are Ellen Wilson Pruitt and Ron Stanhouse, both of the Art Sanctuary of Indiana in Martinsville. Shannon Linker of the Arts Council of Indianapolis. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about art havens here in central Indiana. My guests are Ellen Wilson Pruitt and Ron Stanhouse, both of the Art Sanctuary of Indiana, located in Martinsville, and Shannon Linker of the Arts Council of Indianapolis. Keith, welcome to the program. Keith, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Hello. Certainly. Hello. Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, my comments basically about a question you had earlier for your guest about what the state or what people could do more to be supportive for the arts. And what I'm seeing happen, and one of your guests just spoke about this, was art funding being cut in schools. Mm-hmm. And art's kind of a cultural thing that people growing up kind of learn about, and those people later on become adults. And when arts funding is cut in schools, they sort of become apathetic about the arts later on in life. So I'm kind of seeing this happen more and more where sports becomes kind of the priority and art kind of takes a back seat. And I think people should press their school corporations to kind of emphasize a little bit more on the arts and not cut the funding in those areas.
Thanks very much for the call, Keith. Well, that's something, Ellen, you were speaking about actually right before we went to the break. What does it do? And this is a persistent question about,
right.
I remember once having a conversation with a longtime congressman from here, Andy Jacobs, when there was yet another one of the stories about in a series of budget cuts, mm-hmm. arts education was being one of the hardest hit.
Yeah.
And, you know, Andy's comment was, you know, how much more do we have to do before we're back to the dark ages?
Right.
Why is, though, speaking to Keith's point, why is arts education so important? I'm going to let all three of you have a crack at that one because I can see you're all interested.
Well, first of all, I mean, I know myself, there are examples of some students in school that maybe are not as academically stellar, but they may have a talent for art in some fashion. And if we don't expose them to that in school, they may never know that they have that talent. And the problem is with the cutting of funding in the schools, the roles of establishments like the Art Sanctuary are even greater to expose these young people to the arts because they're not getting that exposure in the school system that they once did. And now some systems are strong in that regard. But, you know, as we all know, that's one of the things that falls under the axe. And at the Art Sanctuary, we take that really seriously as far as exposing the youth to the art, whether it's performance art or visual arts.
Shannon, I'm going to reframe it ever so slightly. Let's pretend here that I'm the governor or a lawmaker. And I'm, you know, under a constitutional obligation here in the state to balance the budget. I've seen state revenues fall, and I'm looking for places to cut. Make a case to me to either maintain or increase arts funding. What do I get for that? What does my state, my constituents, what do they get for that?
Well, what you get is not only a more culturally literate society that we know will take care of the state better, we'll have better jobs, we'll be better educated, all of that, we know that. But what you also get is, I was reading an article this morning, I posted Facebook, that were listed the 10 skills that children learn from art class or art making, and they were incredibly critical to daily life in whatever job you may have, problem solving, collaboration and decision making and all of these things that we all use every day. And so those things, the things that you get from the arts outside of art, that's a wonderful thing to get, but you get so much more. And it's a proven fact that students that are engaged in the arts, just like with sports, sometimes sports will be enough to keep a kid in school. A lot of times arts are the same way. So not to equate the two, they're very different, but yet they have a lot of the same benefits. You get so much more if you're engaged in something, if you care about something. You are, what you're doing is you're creating the next generation of people that care about something, that can empathize, that can create something and create change and cultural viability and objects, entrepreneurism, all of that. I mean, it's just a very beneficial thing to do economically, socially, culturally.
Let's continue with the role playing here for a second, Ron. Assume I'm still a governor or a legislator or whatever. Not likely to happen, but but we'll continue with it for a second. Since you've done this once before, tell me about a program or a policy or an idea from somewhere else in the country that would make it more viable or increase the viability of something like the Art Sanctuary. What could I do to help that, you know, wouldn't be that costly?
Well, this really boils down to the arts being a form of economic development. And so, you know, the Bloomington city administration just rolled out some forgivable loans for the creation of arts and cultural related ventures. The city of Paducah has some tax credit and forgivable loans in place to promote cultural type activities there. And I know that the state of Maryland has designated cultural centers, maybe upwards of 20 different cities that receive tax credits for cultural related investments there.
What would help in terms of, you said you wanted to expand what you're doing in downtown Martinsville, what would help you get to that point quicker?
Well, there are grants, and my background involves downtown revitalization, the Main Street program, which is a statewide. Martinsville has a relatively new chapter, and I participate in that organization as well. But it's a multifaceted approach, and there is no one solution. It's tailored to each town, each city, and you know, some have been more successful. Bloomington's been very successful since they started their Main Street program 30 years ago, and you know, we network closely with Shelbyville and Lafayette, and we trade ideas. But it goes well beyond that. You know, nearly 50 states, and there's a national conference, and there's a lot of trading of ideas.
We are talking about Art Havens here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can do what Aaron did and connect with us via Facebook at WFYI. Aaron has sent us a question saying, I opened an art studio in Westfield. How would you recommend marketing to a small town? I give pottery lessons and kids' painting classes. However, I am struggling as a young small business owner. Ellen, I think that's one. You're probably the closest parallel to where Erin is right now.
Well, she's already utilizing one of the great assets we have right now, like Facebook, free social media that spreads the word. I mean, it's a great tool, and I shamelessly use it all the time whenever I can, because it's word of mouth if you can get that to one person. And marketing your art right now, I mean, any artist will tell you that with economic times the way they are, but particularly I think it's strong when you're giving instruction in classes, because people are looking for ways of learning new aspects. And if she contacts several of the different art sites and websites that they have, like Indie Arts and things like that, which gets your word out there.
We've also gotten an email question from a listener named Chris, who says, how are artists selected, juried in for studio space? Is there a review process after a set amount of time? Requirements for public interaction? I'll throw that one to Shannon.
Well, I think that is dependent upon the space. Some of them, like I know the Harrison Center, typically has a wait list. Their rates are less because they're a nonprofit, whereas the Stutz, their rates might be a little bit more. They have different things to offer. As far as I know, they are, if you can, you know, if you're an artist and you can pay the rent, you can have a studio. And it's really up to the artist to decide if this is right for me. Like the Wheeler Arts community, I know that they had kind of a process in the beginning. You know, you need to be able to prove you are a working artist instead of just anyone living there. I think that that's an ongoing struggle, though, because it's kind of hard with Indie Artist Colony as well. I think they have some people at first that thought, oh, this is a great place, I'm just going to live here, and then realized, oh, this is a bunch of artists, and they're doing their thing, and they're having jam sessions down in the basement, and they're, you know, talking about art all the time. So they've kind of self-selected out. But I think it is, you know, it's a commercial enterprise in a sense, and you pay to show at the Art Bank, for example, in Mass Ave, you pay a fee for a wall to show your work. You know, you could have a studio there as well. So it's very much a business. Artists are running their own small business, and people forget about that. But that's one of the things that we try to help
them with.
Yeah,
artists have to eat, too. Starving artists and not happy artists.
Pay rent, all of that stuff, yeah.
Ron, how does it work at the Art Sanctuary? What's the model there?
Well, the board has come up with a series of steps, and we actually just filled a vacant studio in the last week. So as it turns out, the vacant studio is offered first to an existing studio artist. If there is some moving around, sometimes artists want larger spaces.
Wants that corner office, right?
That's right. Somewhat smaller spaces.
Yeah.
Sometimes two artists share a space. They come and they go. They decide not to share. So there is an application. You have to give formal notice to people that there is a vacancy. And then if there is no in-house artist that wants to move into that space, then we try to give it a couple weeks, you know, or a month. And let's take any interested artists who's available. Of course, there's a jury process, and there's a minimum standard of art, which we've gotten a few volunteers to form a committee, and they review. You know, I'm an accountant. I should not be on that committee, right? So they select, typically, and then they award a studio.
You're an accountant. What, you know, the interest in the arts, is it something that that feeds the other side of your brain, basically? Or is that what prompted you to commit yourself to throwing this much time and energy to it?
That's a great question, John.
One you're still trying to answer.
I mean, in a sense, you know, this is artistry for me, and we're helping to create a downtown, bring life back, make something out of nothing, right? And that's what artists do.
We are talking about art havens in Indiana here on No Limits. We've gotten a Facebook comment or suggestion from a listener named Doug, who said, wants us to take a look at urbanartcommission.org. It says, Urban Art is an independent nonprofit organization committed to excellence in developing public art and urban design in Memphis and beyond. Shannon, are you familiar with it?
It sounds familiar, but I don't know that I am necessarily.
What is the greatest need we have right now in terms of here as a community fostering the arts, the engagement? I'll start with you, Shannon, because you're all going to come at this from slightly different perspectives. I'm going to let everybody take a shot at this one. What's the greatest need?
Well, when we're talking about individual artists, I mean, in our world, there's so many different layers to this, but today we're talking specifically individual and visual artists mostly. I think what I've seen is with the economic downturn, we have seen galleries go out of business, and we have seen a lot of pop-up spaces, and through this, the participation in gallery openings and, you know, IDOTA's First Friday and all of that has been really high. But I think there's a disconnect between coming out and viewing the art and actually purchasing it. I think we all need to do a better job of letting the public know that these artists are business people, and they do have kids in college or a mortgage and car payments and things like that. And in order for them to continue to create the art that we enjoy and that give us an identity here in Indy, we have to buy their art. There is something out there that you would find amazing if you would. I don't want you to buy something you don't like, but it's going to be in your family for generations. So make sure you love it. But there is something if you find it, and know that you're supporting an entire community in a sense when you buy art. So I think that is really critical. I think the artist residency idea too is something that needs to happen.
That's a big need. Ron, I'm going to let Ellen have the last word because I think as the artist she should. But Ron, what do you think is the biggest need we have right now in terms of fostering the arts here in Central Indiana?
I'm not sure I answer this the way you hope, John, but it really
comes
down to
that's why I asked the question.
A need for self-expression, you know, among a community or within a city, and people need to discover how to express themselves, right? So that's what I see artists do. You know, I'm the fly on the wall, and I get to watch these artists network and talk and socialize and share ideas, and it helps them express themselves better. And then we see visitors come in and they plug in to someone's expression and it means something to them. And I think that if we could help people find that way to plug in, you know, or on the other side to express themselves, I think we do the community a huge service.
Ellen, I am going to give you a chance. What, as an artist, as a working artist right now, what is the greatest need we have to foster the arts?
Well, not only am I a resident artist of the Art Sanctuary, but I have an active role in the promotion and interest in the Art Sanctuary entity. So I'm not just in my studio painting. I'm sending emails to WFYI saying, hey, look at us, and things like that, because, you know, it, as an artist, it's introduced me to further responsibility to the community as a whole, to give them this that was not there before. And so we're also enhancing the community and maintaining an entity like the Art Sanctuary for down the road for other people to enjoy.
What, if I could do one thing, if listeners could walk away with one thing here that they could do that would improve the art scene here in Central Indiana, what would it be? Shannon, I think I know your answer.
I would say commit to buying one piece of art per year. One piece.
One piece of art per year. Ellen?
I'd say so, too. Look at art as a way of gifting to your family and friends, you know, something that's going to last a lifetime.
And Ron, you get the last word now.
Similar, step out of your shell, break the patterns, do a different routine, and talk to the artist, talk to them about their art. There's a relationship that builds.
I want to thank you all for spending this time with us. I want to thank my guest, Ellen Wilson Pruitt. Ellen, thank you for being here. Ron Stanhope, Ron, thank you for joining us today. And Shannon Linker of the Arts Council of Indianapolis. We will be back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about farming here in Indiana. It's an appropriate topic. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alsett. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.